welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from Radio's Yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levillier, coming up in this hour, Adventure. Later on, we hear I Was a Communist for the FBI, featuring film actor Dana Andrews. Right now, it's Dangerous Assignment. An episode heard on April 15, 1953. This is the syndicated version, though normally heard on NBC. Lloyd Burrell stars.
Baghdad, Martinique, Singapore. At all the places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you will find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though. Trouble. When I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's going to wind up with my life getting saved because somebody drops a bomb on me. Morning, Commissioner. You sent for me?
Yes, Steve. The Flying Fenways are in trouble.
Flying Fenways?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a trapeze act.
Frank and Lenny Fenway, ex-Army flyers. They settled down in India after the war and opened up an airline. One of them, Lenny, disappeared in Tibet 2 weeks ago with the company's only plane.
Well, they are in trouble. Well, go on, Commissioner.
He was carrying a passenger at the time, a Chinese nationalist agent named Tai Singh. The agent had been sent from Formosa to contact certain tribes in Tibet, a resistance group still holding out against the new order in China.
And you say Fenway flew the agent to Tibet, hasn't been heard of since? Any word from Tai Singh?
Yes, Steve. A caravan from Tibet picked him up 2 days ago and brought him into Kashmir last night, more dead than alive. He's in a coma at the hospital in Srinagar. Hasn't been able to tell us what happened to Fenway.
Look, Commissioner, if he'd been captured, we'd have heard a propaganda broadcast about it.
Yeah, they'd certainly have accused Fenway of being a spy and made a big thing out of it. Well, get over there, Steve. See what information you can get out of the agent Tai Singh. Find Lenny Fenway and get him out of Tibet before he falls into the wrong hands. Well, that's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
Sure, I've got my assignment. All I have to do is find an army flyer named Lenny Fenway who disappeared in Tibet. Sounds like a cinch. Yeah. He's somewhere in China's backyard. Over 400,000 square miles of it. It's late Monday afternoon when my plane lands at Srinagar in Kashmir. I hustle over to the hospital, hoping the nationalist agent Tai Singh has recovered consciousness and I can get a lead from him. But he hasn't, so I wander out to the waiting room. There I run into Frank Fenway, the missing flyer's brother.
I've already told the colonel who I know about this.
The colonel?
Colonel Yi. Flew in from Formosa this morning. He's with Nationalist Intelligence. He really gave me the old third degree. I think he suspects Lenny and I pulled some sort of a double cross.
Well, why should he think that?
Oh, beats me. He doesn't need to trust anybody.
How'd you and your brother get involved with Tai Singh, anyway?
He's an old friend of ours. Met him in China during the war. About a month ago, he walked into our office in New Delhi. Said he had a little business to toss our way if we were interested.
You were, huh?
He wanted us to fly him from here to Srinagar first, then over to a small village in Tibet.
Why Srinagar?
I had to pick up some radio equipment he was to take with him to Tibet. That's how he was going to keep in touch with the shop here.
Well, what shop?
Oh, silversmith's place. Sort of a nationalist headquarters.
This Colonel Yi you spoke to, where is he now?
Over at the shop, I'd say. Why?
I'd like to have a talk with him. 10 minutes later, we pull up in front of a small shop on a crowded side street. I show my credentials to the clerk, and he takes us into a small back room where we find Colonel Yi pacing the floor nervously. Nearby, a radio operator is fiddling with his set, but all he's getting is static.
The possibility that we will hear from the missing flyer is remote, gentlemen. Still,
there's no harm in keeping an open circuit. And what are your plans, Colonel Yi?
At the moment, Mr. Mitchell, my hands are tied. I could contact Formosa, tell them to begin the airdrop operation.
Hey, wait a minute. How do you know where the stuff is to be dropped? Tai Singh was supposed to pick out the locations, and you couldn't have talked with him.
I did not have to. Here. Look at this, Mr. Mitchell.
A map. Where'd you get it?
It was found in the lining of Tai Singh's coat.
Hey, wait a minute. These pencil marks. Circles here. Here.
Mm-hmm.
Could they be the locations Tai Singh picked out?
I think so, yes.
But you can't be sure until Tai Singh regains consciousness and you've verified it with him. Then your troubles are over.
No, not quite. There is still your flyer, Lenny Fenway, to be found. It is most important.
To my government, yeah, because if we don't find him, he'll be a perfect pigeon for some phony propaganda. But how does he affect your operation?
He represents a very serious threat to the success of our mission.
Now, wait a minute, ye...
Take it easy, Frank. What are you driving at, Colonel?
Your brother may know of this map. The locations where the airdrops are to be made.
How could he know?
First, let me inform you that your brother's plane has been found.
What?
When did this happen, Colonel?
I learned of it only this morning when I questioned members of the caravan. The men who brought Tai Singh here. One of the men had heard from a villager at San Yitao that a plane was found abandoned near there 10 days ago.
Had it crashed?
No. Apparently, engine trouble had developed. A forced landing was necessary.
Well, that's a relief. He must be still alive, then.
You will not be happy to learn that the plane has been confiscated by hostile troops.
I don't care about that. I'm more interested than Lenny.
Yeah. And what makes you think he knows about this map?
I am assuming that Mr. Fenway's brother accompanied Tai Singh on his journey to contact the various tribal chiefs.
Being old friends, they might have discussed the location of the airdrops.
Huh? I am assuming further that the two men were making their way back here when they ran into trouble. Soldiers, perhaps. Tai Singh got away. Perhaps your brother, Mr. Fenway, did not.
So if Fenway was captured, the affair would be kept quiet while they put the pressure on him to try to make him talk.
Exactly, Mr. Mitchell. Now, should my government go ahead with our plans, we might drop much-needed supplies and equipment into enemy hands.
Yeah.
So what happens now?
Let's have a look at that map again, Colonel.
Yes.
Where'd the caravan pick up Tai Singh?
Here in the north, not far from the Sing Quang province border.
Good a place as any to start looking, don't you think, Colonel?
Look, if you two are going hunting for Lenny, you can count me in.
We'll need a plan to get us up there and... Oh, but wait a minute. You're out of business, Frank, remember? No plan.
Now, I'm back in. Hocked everything I could, got my hands on, and made the down payment on another crate yesterday. I was planning on going out to look for Lenny on my own.
All right, you've got a couple of customers.
It's a deal. And this time, gents, the trip is on the house.
Shortly after nightfall, Colonel Yee and I board the plane. Frank Fenway guns it down the runway, and then we're airborne, heading due east over the towering peaks of the Himalaya Range. There's a bright moon out, and that's going to make it easy for us to spot a place to land, but hard to do so unnoticed. 2 hours later, we're approaching our destination, a long, narrow strip of plateau high in the mountains. Fenway makes a low pass over the area, circles, comes in for a landing.
Duck soup, gents, but hold on to your bridge work. It could be bumpy.
Just get this crate stopped as soon as you can, Frank. We don't want to attract any more attention than we have to.
Right.
Get us in as close to those rocks as you can. Give us good cover.
Right.
The village is over in that direction, isn't it, Colonel?
Yes. We cannot see it from here, but it is not far away. I am certain we can contact members of the tribe there.
Come on, Colonel, let's get our gear ready. I'll pack the radio equipment. Can you manage the rest of the stuff, huh?
Yes.
Right, you're in.
I'll open the door.
Get down. I will hand this to you.
Okay. Now, let's have it.
Yeah, do I.
Got it.
See, can I give you a hand?
No, we're all set. Get up front and move this crate out of here on the double.
Well, good luck.
We'll need it. You ready, Colonel?
Yes, ready. I have everything, I think.
Now let's head for the rocks over there.
So long.
Well, so far, so good, Colonel.
Over here, Mr. Mitchell.
Yeah, this looks like a good spot. We can keep under cover among these rocks here for a while and see if our landing has stirred up any interest.
In this moonlight, Mr. Mitchell, I do not think our arrival has gone unnoticed.
How right you are, Colonel. Look, over there.
What? And then on horseback.
A dozen of them at least. They're headed this way.
Let us move back.
Yes. What do you make of them, Colonel?
I do not think they are tribesmen. No, I am certain they are not. Soldiers, a patrol.
Oh, great.
However, I do not believe they could have seen us get off the plane.
You're right. Coming up from that direction, they couldn't possibly have spotted us.
Here. Come, behind this bullet.
Here they come. Can you make out what they're saying, Colonel?
No. They are too far away.
They're looking around. Probably think the plane might have done something.
Yes. I don't think they will come up here.
You're right. They're moving on.
They are headed for the village.
This means we'll have to change our plans.
Yes. The tribesmen there will certainly be warned of the patrol's approach. They will move back into the mountains. We could attempt to signal them up there.
Why not? Let's give it a whirl, Colonel. Colonel and I drag out our flashlights, start blinking them toward the mountains. This goes on for half an hour, and then we get an answer. A light blinking on and off in the distance. Pack our gear and head for it. Light doesn't seem to be more than a mile away, but distances are deceiving up here, and it's almost dawn before we arrive at the tribal chief's camp. We're given a tent, and while the colonel goes off to confer with the chief, I set up the radio equipment. Steve Mitchell here, W6C32. That you, Fenway?
Yeah. You alone, Steve?
Sure, what's up? Did Tai Singh come too?
You're in a jam. That Colonel Yee you're with.
What about him?
He's a phony.
What?
Police here in Srinagar found the real Colonel Yee an hour ago. He'd been murdered.
Oh, great. Look, Fenway, you'd better...
Well, go on, Steve. What is it? Steve, can you hear me? What's wrong? What's wrong?
Plenty is wrong, but I don't think I can explain to Fenway. Not with the cold muzzle of an automatic at the back of my head. Then an arm reaches over my shoulder.
W6C32 calling Steve Mitchell. W6C32 calling.
Sorry, Mr. Mitchell.
You came back just a little too soon, Buster.
And now you find yourself in a rather awkward position, do you not, Mr. Mitchell?
You're not on too healthy ground yourself. What happens if the chief and his tribe find out you're a phony?
There is no chief, and these men are... Well, they belong to no tribe. They are soldiers under my command. And you, Mr. Mitchell, are my prisoner. Yes, Mr. Mitchell. You are my prisoner.
You're not in such a good spot yourself, Yee, or whatever your name is.
And why not, may I ask?
Because the nationalist boys back in Kashmir know you're a phony.
That is not of great importance. What they do not know is that you are my prisoner. And when you broadcast to them at a time I will designate, they will be convinced that everything is in order.
I see.
Very amusing, is it not?
Yeah, maybe for you. In other words, I go on the air, but you write the script, huh?
Exactly. You see... You may not perhaps realize it, but my troops in this area are quite seriously short of supplies at this time. We will greatly accept anything our friends, the nationalists, care to donate by way of parachute drops. And you will, of course, give the signal over the radio for the drops to take place as scheduled.
Got it all worked out, haven't you?
Of course. In the meantime, you will remain in this tent. Two guards, as you see, will be placed at the entrance. If you are foolish enough to attempt an escape... What the... Machine gun!
Looks like trouble for you and your boys. Beautiful sound, isn't it? The phony colonel charges out of the tent. Through the entrance, I spot some natives on horseback with guns. The two guards are milling around trying for a shot, but one of them makes a target out of himself. I dive for the other one and flatten it. Suddenly, a gent with a Tommy gun pops into the tent.
Is your name Mitchell?
Yeah, who are you?
My name is Sun. I am a tribal leader. Come with me.
I don't need any urging. He hustles me outside and gives me a horse. His men are waiting, about a dozen of them, and we pound off. The whole raid's been beautifully organized, and we're away without a scratch. 2 hours later, we're winding up a mountain trail.
It will be one more hour to caves, which we used for headquarters, Mitchell. And there, in the caves, you will find the pilot, Fenway.
Good. So you're one of the resistance leaders, son, huh?
Yes, that is right. Each of us is leader of our own tribe.
Say, I still haven't worked out how you knew I was being held prisoner.
Fenway told us his brother might come and look for him. You see, we expect plane. And last night we see plane land.
Ah, so those men on horseback last night were your boys, huh? You know, ye had me convinced they were soldiers.
My scouts follow you when they find out what happened.
Hey, hold it. Airplane.
Huh? Enemy plane.
Coming in low. Gonna make a pass at us. We're bottled up in this pass.
No. No, go to the sledges over there. Right in under. On his hand high.
He's coming in fast.
We will make it.
I hope you're right.
There. Ledge cover us now.
Yeah, just in time, too.
It's all right. No harm.
He'll probably turn and come back, and this ledge
won't cover us from the other direction.
By that time, we will be around the bend in trail. Come.
Along the trail and around the bend before the plane can make its turn. We wind back further and further into the mountains. A half hour later, we reach San's headquarters, a cave near the ridge. There, I find the missing pilot, Lenny Fenway, with a bandage on his left arm.
Just a scratch, Steve. I got it when we were ambushed.
Yeah. Tell me, what happened, Lenny?
Well, as you know, the Nationalist agent, Tai Singh, hired me to fly him in from Kashmir so he could make the rounds of the tribal resistance leaders and also line up locations for parachute drops of supplies and ammunition.
Yeah?
Well, we were on our way back when we had engine trouble and made a forced landing. So naturally, we abandoned the plane and started heading for the border on foot. And we passed through some real rugged country.
You run into a patrol?
We certainly did. I got separated from Tai Singh and got a slug in my arm. I wandered around lost a couple of days. And then San and his boys found me and, well, they brought me here. How about Tai Singh?
Well, he got back. He's in the hospital, but he'll be okay. Look, why didn't you send word by radio?
It got smashed up in the landing. Oh, by the way, is everything all set on the drops?
What do you mean?
They were supposed to start Thursday.
That's tomorrow.
Tai Singh told me it was very important to their whole timetable that the drops take place on schedule.
Look, Lenny, they can't.
They can't?
Because that phony Colonel Yi has Tai Singh's map. He knows the location of the drops, and his boys will be there waiting.
Aha, but he hasn't seen this map, though.
Say, where'd you get it?
Tai Singh gave it to me in case we got separated. Look, I'll show you. These are the alternate locations for the drops. You see, here?
Yeah.
And there.
Uh-huh.
And more over there, you see?
Yeah.
The tribal leaders know about them.
Hey, if we can get this back across the border, the drops can take place on schedule tomorrow.
But there's only one hitch about that. It's a 2-day trip on horseback.
Yeah, and we've got no radio. Oh, great.
Hey, what was that?
Come on, let's get to the mouth of the cave. Son, what's going on?
Enemy plane have located us. Dropping bombs.
Ah, we don't have enough troubles as it is. We got to get bombed, too.
Hey, look. Way down the mountain. Column of soldiers.
Yes. and the soldiers are coming to attack. We must leave at once.
Hold it. Let me have your binoculars. Yeah. Yeah, Jeep bringing up the rear. Well, what do you know? Our old friend Yee and the driver.
Come, Mitchell, at once. There is no time to lose.
I'll say there's no time to lose. There's a small radio transmitter in that Jeep, looks like.
So?
So we're going to cook up a little gag. If it works, we get the radio.
But what if it doesn't?
Then we don't need the radio. I outline the deal to San in a hurry. He nods and takes off to give the orders. Lenny and I stay under cover in the cave. The troops and Jeep get closer. Suddenly, half of San's men take off along the trail in full view. It works. The troops chase them, leaving the Jeep unprotected. The rest of San's men come out of hiding and charge it. One of their shots hits a tire and stops the Jeep. He and the driver pile out and dive for cover. Lenny and I run to the Jeep, grab the transmitter, and race it back to the cave.
Okay, all set, Steve. Go ahead.
Right with you. Mitchell calling W6C32. Mitchell calling W6C32.
W6C32. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Your brother's here with me, Frank. He's okay.
Good.
You got your plane standing by?
Yeah. Guest up and waiting, Steve.
Good. Same spot, 1 hour after sunset. Got it?
Sure. Seeing you. Over and out.
San's boys will try and keep Yee's troops diverted until we get to the rendezvous.
Is that right?
Right. Let's go. Lenny and I slip down the trail and take off across the ridge, working our way to the plateau where the plane's to pick us up. We arrive in time to start a small fire to guide Frank.
Hey, Steve, take a look at that, coming around that mountain peak.
Yeah, it's Frank, right on schedule, too.
Coming in for a landing.
Come on.
From what I can see, he'll stop about opposite that clump of boulders.
Yeah, well, so far, so good. When we could...
Hey, what's the matter?
Look, back there on that ridge in the moonlight.
Troops!
He and his soldiers must have dropped out the decoy.
Brother, to get this close to getting out of here and then...
Come on, we're going to make a run for it.
You know, Steve, if Frank would only...
Oh, look, he must have seen them too. Yeah, he's turning the plane. Got a taxi toward us.
Well, that's our only chance.
Yeah. Say, he's waving out the window.
They're pointing at us.
Come on. We can make it now. Come on, get in.
Okay. You take my hand,
right? Thanks. Okay, Frank, let it go.
You two okay?
Yeah.
Well, hold your hats then. Pour it into us. Well, they're sharp assistant anyway.
You can say that again.
Hey, we're off the ground.
Why, sure.
Oh, brother, that's a relief. It looks like we finally made it, Steve.
I'm hit.
Steve, you're closer. Grab the controls.
I got him. Come on, baby. Come on. Straighten up and fly right, will you?
Oh, that was close.
Oh, say that again. Hey, how's your arm, Frank?
Oh, it'll be right. Just keep up pointing Todd's home.
That's right. I'll get to deliver that map in time after all.
Hey, look. Do me a favor, will you?
Why, sure. What is it?
The next time you take a charter flight and I have to fish you out of a hole like this...
Yeah?
Don't.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Lloyd Burrell as Steve Mitchell, This is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by Lawrence H. Cecil.
A syndicated recording of Dangerous Assignment with Lloyd Burrell as star from April 15, 1953. The straight-to-air version on NBC employed Brian Dunleavy, film actor, as its leading man, Steve Mitchell. This is an hour of adventure on 2 and 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and now we move on to intrigue and espionage on I Was a Communist for the FBI. Film actor Dana Andrews portrays real-life communist infiltrator Matt Savetic in this episode from September 7, 1952, called Pennies from the Dead.
I Was a Communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews in an exciting tale of danger and espionage, I Was a Communist for the FBI. From the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic come many of the incidents in this unusual story. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI.
9 endless years, but they ended. 3,000 tormenting days and haunted nights. An eternity of nerves, with my stomach in hard knots and my chest bound in steel so I could hardly breathe. How did I last through it? I don't know. Maybe I didn't. Maybe part of a man dies after doing some of the things I had to do. Worth it? Definitely. Would I do it all over again? I don't know.
In a moment, listen to Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man. Now, here is Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, Undercover Man. This story from the confidential file is marked Pennies from the Dead.
I don't like it. I stand in front of Comrade Revson's desk while he studies some papers in front of him and looks up at me from time to time with those small, contemptuous eyes of his. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he snaps,
"How much do you weigh?"
"Why?"
"I ask you."
"Well, 180 pounds, I'd say."
"Good."
"Why?"
"Eyes brown, hair brown. Height?"
"Just tall enough for my feet to reach the ground. With apologies for the gag to Abraham Lincoln, okay?"
"Never mind, you'll do. First, you will go to a passport photo studio and get a photo of yourself."
"Passport photo?"
"To attach to your passport, yes."
"My passport? Where am I going?"
"You are not going. You have just arrived."
"Well, did I have a good trip? And where from?"
"If you were not otherwise such a good man for us, I should find it necessary to discipline you for your impertinence. You will take this passport, made out for one Alexei Borodin. Comrade Borodin landed last night from one of our European ports."
"How did he get a passport?"
"We have methods."
"Forged?"
"We have methods."
"Go on."
"Comrade Borodin is an important Soviet agent we wish to have in this country. However, for the time being, we wish to kill 2 birds with 1 stone. We need money."
"We always need money. How does this cure it?"
"We have here other papers giving you power of attorney to act for a certain Olga Lazarov of Gorodok, a town near Minsk, Russia."
"Yeah? Power of attorney for what?"
"To collect monies due her from the estate of Private First Class Joseph Lazarov of the United States Army, recently deceased. Private Lazarov has no American relatives to claim his insurance and other estate. So we shall claim it in the name of his old forgotten grandmother in Gorodok."
"I see."
"Get a suitable picture taken, then come back. Then I will instruct you where to go and whom to see at the Independent Veterans Organization. It is quite simple. Go and come back."
"I don't like it. I hate it. I don't quite get all of it yet, but what I get, I hate. I've pulled some shoddy little tricks for the party, but this looks like the main event in the Dirty Derby. I go to a place and get a fast photo of myself that makes me look like a B-television version of a Balkan spy. Then I go to a public telephone, making sure I'm not being followed, and dial my FBI contact.
"Hello."
"Drugstore?"
"This is the drugstore. May I help you?"
Well, this is Dr. Herbert.
Yes, doctor.
How about lunch today?
Sounds good to me. You very hungry?
Plenty. Where?
You name it.
I'm at Main and Temple, and there's a little restaurant with booths on the next corner south.
Well, how about 10 minutes?
Right.
Thank you, doctor.
So long.
Yeah, Matt, we're familiar with the device, all right. It's one of the ways the party finances itself.
Can anything be done about it?
Yeah, it's a tough order, Matt. See, the way it works, the party keeps a file on all U.S. veterans of Russian origin. Now, when one dies without heirs or legatees, the party darn well digs up an heir somewhere behind the Iron Curtain, see?
You mean they'll have to turn over Joseph Lazaroff's effects and all to me to deliver to a relative of his somewhere behind the Iron Curtain who doesn't even exist?
You have power of attorney. All legal and to measure.
Forged, probably. Phony.
Probably.
Can't you do something about it?
We don't know yet.
You don't know yet. Meanwhile, I've got to do the dirty work. I've got to be the one who steals the pennies off a dead American soldier's eyes to hand them over to the commies. Well, I won't do it.
Look, Matt.
Yeah.
It's a chance for you to see the inside of the gouge and report to us. We can do certain things about it, sure. But it gives us more research on the trick, fattens our files until we're ready to act.
Meanwhile, I pick dead pockets for the Reds.
If you don't do it, they'll find somebody who will do it. Gladly. They won't report to the FBI, either.
Yeah.
Yeah, you happen to match the description of this Borodin person on the passport, that's all. The Reds could find 10 men in this town to match that description.
What happens to Borodin?
Yeah, it's an interesting angle. Looks as if they're turning a Soviet agent loose in this country and turning you loose on PFC Lazarov's estate at the same time.
Two birds with one stone is the way Revson, the corny comrade, put it.
Don't underrate Revson.
I don't.
And keep in touch. Now, what do you want to eat?
I'm not hungry. I report back to Revson. He appraises my passport photo and then substitutes it for the photo of Alexei Borodin. He gives me the name of the man to see at the Independent Vets Organization and some final words of cheer and caution before I rob the dead.
Be prepared for a hostile reception. Stand firmly, however, on your legal rights as represented in your papers, and which they are unable to controvert. There is nothing they can do but recognize this Olga Lazarov's claim.
Suppose I'm questioned about my passport, my English, my contact with Olga Lazarov.
Answer or not, as you please. If the official gets unruly, rebuke him. Have no scruples about that. Assert your rights.
Very good.
Always place him in the wrong if you can.
Leave it to me.
There is a matter of some $12,000 involved, if our information is correct.
A tidy little donation to the cause.
And already as good as ours. All you have to do is arrange to collect it. Go.
Alexei Borodin, is it?
That's correct, Gregory.
How did this Olga Lazarov happen to learn of her grandson's death?
The obituary was in the American papers.
I wasn't aware that the American press reached such Soviet centers as Moscow, let alone a hinterland like this, what is it?
Gorodok, not far from Minsk.
Does it?
Pardon?
Does our press penetrate the Iron Curtain?
Well, not quite, sir.
Of course.
However, the Soviet government has the interest of its citizens close to its heart.
Did you speak to this Olga Lazarov?
I must ask you not to refer to her as this Olga Lazarov. Olga Lazarov or Madame Lazarov, if you please.
Did you speak to Olga Lazarov?
There's a signature, properly witnessed by 2 citizens of Gorodok.
Yes.
Any data at all is open to your closest scrutiny and investigation.
To whatever extent possible under the circumstances.
Please call me at any time. You have my hotel.
You appreciate the necessity for delay.
Naturally.
A fair amount of money's involved, and these small effects.
He opens a drawer and takes out a soft leather pouch, tosses it on the desk. It's old and dark, with age and sweat and handling, closed with soiled drawstrings. I look at it. I feel it tightening in my throat. This is it. This humble leather pouch containing, I don't know, trinkets, mementos, badges, medals maybe, I don't know. But all at once, I want to know. I want to see and touch the things that Joseph Lazarov soldier of his adopted country thought worth saving. I want to visit the grave of Joseph Lazaroff, dying alone and unmourned in a little rooming house. I want to say, hello, Joe. Want to say, so long, Joe. Sorry.
That's it, and that's about all of it.
You mind if I open the pouch?
Go ahead.
That's right.
What?
Trinkets. Second place, 100-yard dash, purple heart, class ring, a single old-fashioned gold cufflink with a tiny diamond chip in the center, some old coins, discharge button.
And that's all. Does Madame Lazaroff want that, too?
Just one gold cufflink?
We didn't take the other, believe me.
I'm just asking. Could I visit Private Lazaroff's grave?
Why?
It's customary.
You certainly do it up brown, don't you?
Whatever that means, and I don't care what it means, I'd like to see Private Lazaroff's grave.
Very well, Mr. Borodin. I'll arrange it for you.
I find the little gravestone among the thousands in the cemetery. I'm glad Private First Class Lazaroff has the company of his fellow soldiers. It's a fairly new grave. The plot hasn't greened over yet, but it will. I stand there a while with my hat off, I think. So long, Joe. Don't be too rough on us. The job says I've got to rob you and hand it over to strangers. Look at it this way, Joe. It's an investment. It's experience and the inside dope. And it all goes into files where we'll have use for it someday. Take it this way, soldier. It's your last contribution to your country, way beyond the call of duty. Your country, the USA, even if your name is Lazaroff. Okay? I'm almost at the exit gate when I suddenly realize that there's been a tired potted geranium on PFC Lazaroff's grave and none on the others. But something else wipes that out of my mind in a hurry. A car is parked at the exit. Sitting behind the wheel, looking grim, is Comrade Revson. Revson.
Get in.
Well, what are you doing here? How did you know I was here?
Get in.
Trouble?
Enough, and for you.
Me? Why?
What? Get in.
For half an hour, we drive out into the country, Revson not saying a word, his mouth set and his eyes dark with anger. Finally, he stops the car and we walk away from it. We never know when the FBI might have wired a car or an office or a hotel room to record conversation. We sit down under a tree. Revson pulls up grass for a moment. Then he looks at me and comes to the point like a pistol shot.
They've arrested Borodin.
The police?
The FBI. Very curious.
Why?
Why did they pick Borodin up? He passed customs all right. Nobody questioned his passport.
They might have let him through, then notified the FBI that he was in on a questionable passport.
The FBI have picked him up without any passport at all. You and I alone knew he had none.
Well, that's true, but I...
You have his passport.
By your instructions, comrade.
Give it to me.
Certainly. You'll have to put Borodin's picture back and get the passport to him.
Leave that to me.
Does that put Borodin in the clear?
I think so. It is very important for him to be in the clear. He's a trained Soviet agent.
Look, if the FBI has picked up the real Alexei Borodin, how can I go back to the veterans organization claiming to be Borodin?
There is no reason whatever to suppose that the organization keeps closely informed on FBI activities.
That's true.
The FBI does not exactly publicize its every move.
That's right.
And $12,000 will mean a lot to us right now. Worried?
Not now.
Let's go back to the car then.
Hello?
Mr. Borodin?
Yes.
This is Gregory of the Veterans Organization. I wonder if you could come down to my office and discuss a few final points in the Private Joseph Lazaroff matter.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Gregory. When would it be convenient for you?
Could you make it right now?
Coming right down. Good morning. I took a taxi right down when you phoned.
Mr. Borden, this is Mr. Darwin Dykes.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Dykes?
How do you do, Mr. Borden? I wonder if I might ask you a few little questions.
Sure, go ahead.
May I see your passport, please?
Passport?
You see, I'm new at this job, Mr. Borden. Simply as a precaution, I called on the FBI to help me out on this matter.
The FBI?
Yes. Here are my credentials.
I see.
It's a curious thing. Another Mr. Borodin entered the country by the same port of entry that you did. Somewhere along the line, he claims to have lost his passport.
This Mr. Borodin has a passport. I can vouch for that much.
Could I see it, sir?
Why, you don't seem to have it on me.
Oh?
I must have left it in my other suit.
Well, I have a car outside. I'll run you down to your hotel.
Could we stop at a pay station somewhere for a minute or two? There's a phone call I have to make, privately.
Hello?
Jepson?
Who is this?
Svetik.
Svetik?
What do I do? That veterans official just got a hunch to call in the FBI. They asked me for my passport, and I don't have it anymore. What do I do?
Who is this?
Svetik.
You have the wrong number.
Revson?
I'm sorry. You have the wrong number.
Hello? Well, listen. Hello? Ah. I didn't mean the wrong number. Revson, all right?
Hello?
Hello, drugstore?
Drugstore.
Dr. Herbert talking.
Shoot, doctor.
Listen. Listen, I've been picked up by the FBI without my passport. The real Borodin has it. So what do I do? I've called Revson and he's powdered out on me.
What?
Revson, the second I said FBI, he didn't know me anymore.
Wait a minute. Who is this?
I told you, Dr. Herbert.
Oh, you're the Dr. Herbert I met yesterday at that party over the cafe on 3rd and Moffat Avenue, aren't you?
No.
Well, you sound like him. Oh, sure. I met you and your wife at 5 p.m. downstairs. No, 3rd and Moffat.
No.
Oh, sorry. You've got the wrong party then.
Hello? Oh, hello?
Well, Mr. Borodin, no luck?
I thought sure I'd left my passport in this room.
Think you might have lost yours, too?
I can't find it.
Too bad.
Just how bad is it?
Well, I'll have to ask you not to leave town, Mr. Borodin.
Oh, I won't.
See, we'll want to have a little talk with you. Meanwhile, you may find your passport.
I'm sure I will.
I'm sure you will. Goodbye, sir.
I'm alone in my hotel room and alone in the world, alone and deserted. Revson has disowned me. My FBI contact is hung up on me. One tells me I have the wrong number. The other tells me I'm somebody he met at a party on 3rd and Moffat, and I was with my wife. All at once, it's sun up. All at once, the dawn. I grab my hat and take a taxi to 3rd and Moffat. It's a little after 5, but there is my FBI contact sitting in a booth waiting for me.
Don't you see, Matt, by talking to Revson, first you put me in a very difficult spot. If I get you off the hook now with the FBI, Revson will know you've pulled some important wires.
Probably the FBI.
Well, they'll put two and two together and get FBI, and you'll be in serious trouble.
What should I do?
Well, I wouldn't talk to you over the phone, but I'd see you. Same goes for Comrade I.
See him.
I think you'd better.
Will you keep an eye on me, sort of?
Sort of.
Because someday I'd like to have that wife you invented, if I live.
You were a fool, Svetik.
An accident of birth, okay.
No nonsense, do you hear?
How was I to know the Veterans Organization character would call in the FBI?
You should not have called me. Then you come to the office. You know the FBI wires officers.
All right, so you took me to this rehearsal hall. We're okay. The question now is, what do we do?
We have a choice. Only one of you can be the real Alexei Borodin. Borodin is an important agent.
Svetik has access to important money.
If we look rotten to the Independent Veterans Organization, we lose this $12,000, and they'll always be suspicious of us. Our whole scheme will be exposed. But Borodin is an important agent. Moscow trained, Lenin Institute. If he gets the passport, he stays.
If Borodin gets the passport, he stays, yeah. He stays. I won't have to steal those pennies from a dead American soldier's eyes. Then I think, sure,
But if I don't get the passport, I'll have to get off the hook with the FBI. They'll have to know that I'm FBI, too. I'll get off. But Revson will be suspicious then. Suspicious? No, he'll know. And my usefulness to the FBI will be over. That's the problem, then. Do I want to skin out of robbing a dead soldier for the commies? Or do I want to keep on working for the FBI? I don't know. I just don't know.
Fettig?
Yeah?
Borodin is a very important man.
You want to let him have the passport?
$12,000 right now is important money. Yes.
Well?
Comrade Fettig, you decide.
Isn't that a pretty big decision for me to make?
Make it.
All right. I want the passport. I telephone the Independent Veterans Organization. I'm asked to come down. I show the passport. I'm a good boy now.
It'll take some time for the transaction to be finalized, but we'll have Private Lazaroff's estate cleared for you in time and made over to you as attorney for Olga Lazaroff.
Thank you.
No reason why you can't have this little bag of his small effects now.
I take the pathetic little leather pouch with its poor, eloquent relics of the dead. I find my way out to the cemetery again to pay my respects, to offer my last apologies. A girl edges past me and stands silently at another grave a few yards away. I pour the humble tokens out of the leather pouch. Wanted to tell you, soldier, I hate what I had to do. But the comrades won't be wanting these small things. Purple heart, cufflink, grade school athletic medal. Wanted to tell you, soldier, with your kind permission. I'd like to keep them for you. Okay? I turn to go. Something in the grass glitters in the setting sun. I pick it up. Seems I dropped the cufflink. Pretty shaky. Pretty dim-eyed. Miserable. Then again, pouring the little tokens back into the leather pouch. I stop short. I have two cufflinks where there was only one before. I look back, and I see the girl standing there.
You! Girl! I mean you!
I didn't do anything. I'm not doing anything wrong. Really?
Yeah. Just look at this cufflink.
Give it to me.
Then it is yours.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
And why are you standing at Joe Lazaroff's grave now?
I can't help it. I have to see him again.
Joe gave you this cufflink, didn't he?
I have to say goodbye again.
He gave you the cufflink?
Yes.
Why?
He couldn't afford to give me a ring.
A ring?
It's an old-fashioned cufflink his father owned. You hold it between the middle finger and the ring finger. See? So. It curls around the ring finger. It looks like a ring on the marriage finger. See?
Marriage finger?
We roomed in Mama's rooming house. We loved each other. But Mama said no. I couldn't marry him.
Oh.
But I did.
Wow.
Secretly. So nobody would find out. We were married almost a year. We were so happy.
Look, listen to me. This is big news for both of us. But mostly for me. Now listen to me closely, Mrs. Joseph Lazaroff. I tell Soldier Lazaroff's widow and heir what to do to get her legacy. And warn her solidly not to involve me. I don't leave her with her dead until I know she's got it right. Then I go. I'm a new man, washed clean by the tears of gratitude in her eyes. This is a lump sum the comrades aren't going to get. But they won't know it until I'm sure Alexei Borodin is safely deported again. Twin bill, double victory. I hit the pavement. Away from the grave, the girl, and the gratitude, I come down to earth again. I know that gratitude is great. But I know that nothing will save me if the comrades find out what I've engineered with their help. Comes the showdown. I'm a communist for the FBI. I walk alone.
is Dana Andrews stepping out of the character of Matt Svetik to remind you that our story wasn't pure fiction. Oh, no. We've changed names and modified incidents to disguise the story from the wrong people to protect the right people. But you get the general idea. Sure you do. Next week, another adventure of Matt Svetik, who worked undercover for the FBI. Hear it, because you are the right people to hear it. Thanks.
I Was a Communist for the FBI, from September 7, 1952, a syndicated broadcast. In that same year, Dana Andrews, who was the star, was also appearing on the silver screen in Assignment Paris, where he starred as Jimmy Race, assigned to an espionage trial of a captured American by Hungarians, alongside Audrey Totter and George Sanders. And that brings to an end this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.